responses from the temple profile, Mindy said. You're sure you put it on the marriage board?
Yes.
Mindy studied her.
Liar.
I did just as you asked, Nicky insisted.
What did you do?
I put it on the marriage board. It just might not be the most prominent flyer there.
There are lots of flyers and...
Typical, Mindy muttered.
What?
Of course you'd put in the least amount of effort into helping me with this.
I went all the way to a temple in Southall. That's no small effort, Nicky shot back.
Yeah, you've signed on for a job, which means you'll be travelling there regularly.
How does that work?
You're all right with going to Southall as long as it benefits your needs.
It's not all about me. I'm helping women.
Mindy snorted.
Helping?
Nicky, this sounds like another one of your... She waved as if trying to stir up the word from thin air.
Your causes.
What's wrong with having a cause? Nicky demanded.
I care about helping women tell their stories. It's a much more worthwhile pastime than advertising for a husband.
This is what you do, Mindy said. You follow your so-called passions and don't consider the consequences for other people.
This charge again. It will be easier to be a criminal fairly prosecuted by the law than an Indian daughter who wronged her family. A crime will be punishable by a jail sentence of definite duration rather than this uncertain length of family guilt trips.
How exactly did my leaving university have consequences for other people? It was my decision.
Sure, Dad could no longer tell his family in India I was becoming a lawyer. Big deal. It wasn't worth being unhappy just so he could have bragging rights.
It wasn't about bragging rights, Mindy said. It was about duty.
You sound like an Indian housewife already.
You had a duty to Dad. He had been so devoted to championing you. All those school debates, all those speech contests. He included you in political conversations with his friends, and he didn't stop you from arguing with Mum if he thought you had a point. He put such faith in you.
There was a note of hurt in Mindy's voice.
Dad and Mum had taken Mindy on a trip to India before her exams as well, taking all spiritual steps to ensure that she got into medical school. After the results indicated nursing, not medical school, as her best option, Dad's disappointment had been obvious, and with renewed enthusiasm, he shifted his focus to Nicky.
He was proud of you too, you know, Nicky said. He wished I was more practical, like you.
Having been measured up against his brother his whole life, Dad had been careful to avoid comparing his daughters, but after Nicky dropped out of university, all fair play went out of the window.
Look at Mindy. She works hard, she wants a stable future. Why can't you be like that? He'd said.
Nicky felt a sudden rush of irritation with Dad.
You know, Dad contradicted himself all the time. One minute he was saying, follow your dreams, that's why we came to England. The next he was dictating what I should do for a living. He assumed that my dreams were identical to his.
He saw a potential career for you in law. You had the chance to succeed professionally. What are you doing now?
I'm exploring my options, Nicky said. By this time you could have been earning a salary, Mindy reminded her.
I'm not as concerned with money and material things as you are, Mindy.
That's really what this whole arranged marriage thing is about, isn't it? You're not confident that you'll meet a professional with a fat salary in a pub, but if you screen the profiles of a few Indian doctors and engineers, then you can zero in right away on their earnings and filter them accordingly.
Mindy turned off the tap and stared angrily at her.
Don't you make me feel like a gold digger for wanting to support Mum. There are expenses to think about. You left, so you have no idea.
I moved across London. It's hardly as if I abandoned my family. That's what young women do in Britain. We move out. We become independent. This is our culture.
You think Mum isn't concerned about finances? You think she doesn't want to retire early from working for the council and enjoy her life? I'm the only one contributing here. Things need to be repaired, unexpected bills arrive, and the car servicing is overdue. Think about that the next time you spout out your lines about independence.
Nicky felt a pinch of guilt in her gut.
I thought Dad had savings. He did, But some of his savings were tied up in his company's stock options. They haven't really recovered since the financial crisis. And he took out that loan to renovate the guest bathroom, remember? Mum had to defer payments and now the interest has nearly doubled. It means Mum has had to put off all those other home improvements she thought would be done by now. The curtains, the built-in shoe cupboard, the kitchen counters. She's already starting to worry about losing face. She's concerned about how our home would look to my prospective husband's family. Not to mention what they might say if she couldn't afford a dowry or a lavish celebration. Min, I had no idea. I told her I wouldn't marry someone from a superficial family, and she said, there might not be any Punjabi boys for you to marry then. She was joking, of course. Mindy smiled, but her eyes were tight with worry. I could help, Nikki said. Now you've got your own expenses to think about. I'll have some extra income from this new job. I could send some money once a fortnight. Nikki hesitated, realizing what she'd just committed to. The extra income was supposed to go into her savings, so she'd have something to fall back on when O'Reilly's went bust. She would need money to rent a place then, because moving back home would be far too humiliating. It won't be much, Nikki added. Mindy looked pleased. It's a gesture that counts, she said. I have to say, I didn't expect this of you. It's very responsible. Thank you. In the other room, Mum had turned up the volume of her television series, and the shrill violin notes of a Hindi song poured through the house. Mindy turned the tap back on. Nikki stood by while Mindy scrubbed the dishes, her vigorous motions sending soap suds flying into the air. As they landed on the counter, Nikki wiped them off with her fingers. Use a towel, Mindy said. You're leaving streaks. Nikki did as she was told. So, when are you meeting Pravin? Friday, Mindy said. Mum's excited about it, I guess. Mindy shrugged. She peered at Mum through the kitchen entrance and lowered her voice. She is, but I talked to him on the phone last night. And? He asked me if I wanted to work after marriage. Oh, for fuck's sake, Nikki said, dropping a dish towel on the counter and turning to stare at Mindy. What did you say? I said yes. He didn't sound too thrilled about it. You're still meeting him. You don't know until you meet someone face to face, do you? Judging from the temple profiles alone, I wouldn't give any of those men the time of day, Nikki said. But that's you, Mindy said. You and your feminism. With a flick of her wrist, she dismissed Nikki and everything she stood for. Rather than enter another argument, Nikki finished her share of the dishes without saying another word. As she slipped out into the back garden to sneak an after-dinner cigarette, she felt as if she could breathe again. The next day, Nikki arrived at the community centre early to set up her classroom. The room was as modest as Kulwinder Kaur's office. Two rows of desks and chairs faced a blank whiteboard. Nikki moved the seats around. According to Olive, a horseshoe shape would help promote more discussion. A thrill shot through Nikki as she pictured the classroom full of women writing the stories of their lives. For the first lesson, Nikki had prepared an introductory task. Everybody was to write a complete scene in 10 simple sentences. Then, returning to each sentence, they had to add a detail, dialogue or description, for example. By 7:15 p.m., Nikki had paced the classroom and wandered out twice into the deserted hallway. She stepped back inside and wiped the board for the fifth time. She stared at the empty chairs. Perhaps this was all some elaborate prank. As she began to pull the desks back to where she'd found them, Nikki heard footsteps. The loud, slow thumps made Nikki aware of her own heartbeat. She was in this run-down building all alone. She pulled a chair out in front of her, preparing to use it, should she need to. There was a knock on the door. Through the window, Nikki saw a woman wearing a scarf on her head. It was just a lost granny. It didn't occur to Nikki that she was one of her students until the woman entered and took a seat. "Are you here for the writing class?" Nikki asked in Punjabi. "Yes," the old lady nodded.
Do you speak English? Nikki thought it would be rude to ask. I guess you're my only student tonight, Nikki said. We'll begin. She turned to the board, but the woman said, No, the others are coming. The women streamed in together at 25 past. One by one, they took their seats and made no apologies for their tardiness. Nikki cleared her throat. Class begins at 7 p.m. sharp, she said. The women looked up in surprise. Nikki saw that they were mostly elders who weren't used to being reprimanded by a young woman. She backtracked slightly. If this time doesn't work with the bus schedule, I'm sure we can arrange to begin at 1:30 instead. There were some nods and a general murmur of approval. Let's quickly introduce ourselves, Nikki said. I'll start. My name is Nikki. I like to write and I'm looking forward to teaching you all to write as well. She gave the first woman a nod. Pritam Kaur. Like some of the other women, she wore a white salwar kameez, which indicated her widow's status. A scarf hemmed with white lace hid her hair, and a walking stick printed with lavender floral patterns lay at her feet. And why have you joined this class, Pritam? Nikki asked. Pritam winced at the sound of her name. The other women looked startled as well. That's Bibi Pritam to you, young lady, she said stiffly. Or auntie. Or Pritam ji. Of course, I'm sorry, Nikki said. These were her students, but they were also Punjabi elders, and she would have to address them appropriately. Pritam accepted her apology with a nod. I want to learn writing, she said. I'd like to be able to send letters on the internet to my grandchildren in Canada. Strange. She seemed to think the course would cover letter writing and emailing. Nikki nodded to the next woman. Dharampal Kaur, I want to write, the woman said simply. She had small lips, which pinched tightly together, as if she wasn't meant to speak at all. Nikki couldn't help her gaze lingering on Dharampal Kaur. Like the older women, she was shrouded in white, but there was hardly a wrinkle on her face. Nikki placed her in her early 40s. The woman next to Dharampal also appeared much younger than the rest, with reddish-brown streaks dyed in her hair and pink lipstick that matched her purse. The colour stood out against the plain cream of her kameez. She introduced herself in English, with just the slightest hint of an Indian accent. I'm Sheena Kaur. I can read and write in Punjabi and English, but I want to learn to be a better writer. And if you call me Bibi or Auntie, I'll just die because I must only be 10 or 15 years older than you. Nikki smiled. Very nice to meet you, Sheena, she said. The next elderly woman was tall and thin and had a distinct mole on her chin from which fine hairs poked out. Arvinder Kaur, I want to learn to write everything. Stories, letters, everything. Manjit Kaur, said another woman without being prompted. She smiled brightly at Nikki. Do you also teach us how to do some basic accounting? No. I'd like to write and also learn how to do the bills. There are so many. The other women murmured in agreement. So many bills. Nikki put her hand up to silence them. I wouldn't know the first thing about accounting. I'm here to run a creative writing workshop to collect a collaboration of voices. The women stared blankly at her. She cleared her throat. It's occurring to me that some of you might not be proficient enough in English to write confidently. Who is in this category, not confident in English? She raised her hand to indicate that they should all do the same. All of the widows except Sheena raised their hands. That's okay, Nikki said. In fact, if you'd prefer to write your stories in Punjabi, I can adjust to that. Some things are just lost in translation anyway. The women's prolonged staring made Nikki uneasy. Finally, Arvinda raised her hand. Excuse me, Nikki, how are we meant to write stories? Good question. She turned to the desk and picked up a stack of loose leaf paper. Now, I know we lost some time today, but this is a great place to start. She passed the papers around and explained the instructions. The women reached into their bags and took out their pens and pencils. Nikki turned to the board to write down a few essential notes for the next lesson. Next class is on Tuesday, 7:30 to 9 p.m. Be punctual. She wrote this in Punjabi as well, thinking herself quite considerate and adaptable. When she turned back around, she expected to see the women hunched over their papers scribbling away, but they remained still. Manjeet and Preetam tapped their pens against their desks and looked at each other. Dharampal looked positively irritated. "What's wrong?" Nikki asked. Silence. "Why isn't anybody writing?" she asked. More silence, and then Dharampal spoke. "How are we supposed to write?" What do you mean? "How are we supposed to write?" Dharampal repeated. "When you haven't taught us yet." "I am trying to teach you to write, but we have to start somewhere, don't we? I know it's difficult, but if I'm to help you with your stories, then you need to actually start writing them. Just a few sentences." She trailed off when she noticed Preetam. The way she clutched the pencil reminded Nikki of being in nursery school. It dawned on her then, just as Arvinda began to pack away her things. "You knew," Nikki said, as soon as Kulwinda answered the phone. She didn't bother saying Sat Sri Akal first. She wasn't going to pay respects to this conniving elder.
"Knew what?"
Kulwinda asked.
"Those women can't write." "Of course, you're meant to teach them." "They can't write."
Nikki wanted the words to burn past Kulwinda's calm exterior.
"You tricked me into it. I thought I'd be teaching a creative writing workshop, not an adult literacy class. They can't even spell their own names." "You're meant to teach them," Kulwinda repeated. "You said you wanted to teach writing. Creative writing stories, not the alphabet. So, teach them how to write, and then they can write all the stories they want." "Do you have any idea how long that will take? The classes are twice a week. It will take more than twice weekly classes, you know that." "These are very capable women," Kulwinda said.
"You're joking."
"You weren't born writing stories, were you? Didn't you have to learn your ABC first? Wasn't it the simplest thing you had to learn?"
Nikki caught the contempt in Kulwinda's voice. "Look, you're trying to prove a point. I get it. I'm modern. I think I can do anything I want. Well, I can." She was about to tell Kulwinda that she quit, but the words got caught in her throat. She considered it, a familiar sense of anxiety seizing her stomach. Leaving this job would mean having nothing to contribute to Mum and Mindy. Worse yet, they would know that she had given up after just one class, and they would be proven right, that Nikki didn't follow through on anything, that she was just a drifter who avoided responsibilities. She thought of the crumbling pub and pictured Sam wrapped in ribbons of receipts, apologetically telling her that she was being let go.
"This job was falsely advertised. I could report you for that," Nikki said finally.
Kulwinda responded with a snort, as if she knew the emptiness of Nikki's threat.
"Report me to whom?" she challenged.
She waited for a response, but Nikki had none. Kulwinda's message was clear. Nikki had stumbled into her territory and now must play by her rules. In winter, the days lost their shape early. The streets were blurry with shadows and traffic lights as Kulwinda walked home and thought about her day. She wasn't proud of deceiving Nikki, but the more she thought about their conversation, the more she remembered how Nikki had incensed her. It was that demanding attitude that got under her skin. "How dare you ask me to teach these idiots," she might as well have said. Kulwinda's two-story brick home was on the end of Ansel Road. From her bedroom window, the golden tip of Gurdwara's magnificent dome was visible on clear afternoons. The neighbours on the right were a young couple with two small children who sat in the porch and giggled together until their father came home. The neighbours on the left were a couple with a teenage son who had a big dog who howled for hours after they'd left each morning. Kulwinda was used to running through all of these details about her neighbours, anything to avoid thinking of that house across the street.
"I'm home," she announced.
She paused and waited for Sarab's acknowledgement. It pained her on the occasions when she found him deep in silence, staring at the unturned pages of his Punjabi newspaper. "Sarab!" she called from the foot of the stairs. He grunted a reply. She put down her things and went to the kitchen to make a start on dinner. From the corner of her eye, she checked to see if Sarab had moved the living room curtains. This morning, he'd suggested opening them to let in a bit of light so he could read the paper.
Don't, Kulwinder had insisted. The glare from the sun gives me a headache.
Both of them knew it was number 16 and not the pale English sunlight that bothered Kulwinder. Kulwinder set out the plates and the bowl of dal and took the ajar out of the fridge and set the table. There was nothing more comforting in all her years in England than the simplicity of a Punjabi meal. Sarab sat down and they ate quietly, and then he turned on the television and she cleaned the dishes. Maya used to help her with this, but one day she asked, "Why can't Dad pitch in with the cooking and cleaning?" Such questions had crossed Kulwinder's mind in her younger days, but she would have been beaten for suggesting that her father or brothers did the housework. She had taken Maya roughly by the arm and steered her into the kitchen. After completing her chores, Kulwinder went into the living room and sat next to Sarab. The television was on at a low volume. There was an English show on, so it didn't matter that they couldn't hear it, because the things the English laughed about were no laughing matter to Kulwinder. She turned to Sarab and started a conversation.
"An odd thing happened today," she said. "A mix-up with one of my community classes."
She paused for a moment. "My community classes." It was nice hearing it aloud.
"The girl I hired to teach it thought she was teaching women to write their memoirs, but the women who signed up can't even write. I had advertised creative writing classes, and once the women started registering, I knew they were the types who couldn't even spell their own names, but what could I do? Turn them away? That wouldn't be right. I'm there to help the women of our community, after all."
It was partially true. She had been vague with the women about what exactly they would learn in these classes.
"Writing, reading, that sort of thing," she had told them while passing round the registration form.
Sarab nodded, but his eyes were blank. He was staring at the screen now. Kulwinder glanced at the clock and saw that there were many hours to kill before she felt like going to bed, like most nights. The drizzle had cleared.
"Would you like to go for a walk?" she asked Sarab.
How unnatural it felt to ask him like this, when evening walks used to be their after-dinner routine.
"It's good for digestion," she added.
She instantly felt silly trying to persuade him, but today she really wanted his company. Her conflict with Nikki had reminded her of the way she and Maya used to argue. Without even looking at her, Sarab said, "You go ahead." Kulwinder walked up Ansell Road and turned onto a main road where a small strip of shops were illuminated by long fluorescent ceiling bulbs. In Shanti's wedding boutique, a group of young women tried on bangles and held up their wrists, letting the sequins catch the light. The owner of the masala shop next door was patiently ushering out his customers, an English couple, looking very pleased with their bottles of red and yellow powders. Teenagers in puffy black jackets milled in the empty lots outside, stray words and laughter darting into the air.
"Yeah, ah, you dickhead!"
Kulwinder offered a few hellos to passing Punjabi women, but mostly she looked past them. Before Maya died, she used to chat to ladies, turning these walks into lengthy social outings. If their husbands were there, they'd break off into another group with Sarab. On the way home, comparing stories, she often noticed that men and women shared the same information. Who was marrying whom, the rising cost of food and petrol, the occasional community scandal. Now she preferred not to stop. There was no need these days. Only occasionally did people approach to offer their condolences. Most people just averted their gazes. She and Sarab were outsiders now, like the widows and divorced women, and all those shamed parents they had feared becoming. At a traffic light she paused, turned the corner and found a bench to sit on. The smell of sweet fried jalebi rose from a cart nearby. Her feet were rough like sandpaper against her hands as she massaged her heels and considered Nikki. Clearly the girl was not from here, or she wouldn't have been so disrespectful. Her parents were probably city types, Delhi or Bombay, and they probably turned their noses up at the Punjabis who washed up in Southall. She knew what the rest of London thought of Southall. She'd heard all of their comments when she and Sarab decided to move here from Croydon. Village people who built another Punjab in London. They're letting all types of people into this country these days. Best choice we ever made, Sarab had declared when they unpacked their last box. Kulwinder agreed, her heart almost bursting with happiness from the comforts of their surrounds. The spice markets, the Bollywood cinema, the Gurdwaras, the samosa carts on the Broadway. Maya eyed all of it with suspicion, but she would adjust, they assured themselves. One day, she would want to raise her children here too. Tears welled up in her eyes and blurred her vision as a bus rolled to a slow stop in front of her and the door opened. The driver looked at Kulwinder expectantly. She shook her head and waved him along. A sob escaped her throat, but the sound of the engine rumbling drowned it out. Why did she always torture herself like this? Sometimes she got carried away and imagined little moments of Maya's life as it would be. Mundane things like paying for groceries or replacing the batteries in her television remote control. The smaller the details, the harder it hit that Maya would never do these things. Her story was over. The air felt colder now that Kulwinder was still. She wiped her eyes and took a few deep breaths. When she felt strong enough again, she stood up and headed in the direction of her home. Halfway across Queen Mary Road, Kulwinder spotted a police officer. She froze. What to do? Turn around and walk back? Keep going? She stood in the middle of the road until the light turned red and cars started honking their horns, and this was worse because people began to stop and stare. The policeman began searching for the cause of the trouble until his gaze landed on her.
Nothing, no problem, she called out feebly.
He rushed into the street and with a firm hand signal ordered all the cars to stay in place. Then he beckoned her to cross the road towards him.
Is everything all right?
He asked.
Yes,
she replied. She kept her distance and avoided looking him in the eye. A small crowd had emerged from the shops and gathered on the pavement to watch. She felt the urge to shoo them away.
Mind your own business. You're just out taking a walk. Just walking, yes. Good exercise.
She nodded, still aware of the stares. She tried to do a quick scan of who was watching. Unlike Maya, Kulwinder never considered Southall a hotbed of gossip. Most people just shared harmless observations. The problem was that Kulwinder couldn't afford to be observed talking to the police. Somebody might casually mention this scene to a friend or a spouse, and then they might tell somebody else and...
Are you sure you're all right?
The policeman asked. He peered into her eyes.
I'm very good, thank you,
she replied. She found an English word.
Splendid.
Then take care when crossing the road in future. The youngsters like to speed down the Broadway and they turn onto these main roads sometimes.
I will, thank you.
Kulwinder spotted a middle-aged couple approaching. She couldn't recognize them from this distance, but they were sure to notice her chatting with the police in the middle of the street, and if they knew her, they would ask each other, what trouble is she causing now?
Stay safe!
The policeman called after her as she hurried home. Sarab was upstairs when she returned. Kulwinder quietly tidied up the shoes in the small circle of light he had left on for her in the foyer. Then she looked for other things to tidy. The couch cushions surely needed plumping, and maybe Sarab had left her glass in the sink. These tasks calmed her. By the time she was finished, she realized how paranoid she'd been. What were the chances of being noticed? Southall wasn't that small, it just felt that way sometimes. There was no predicting whom she'd run into. She'd already avoided another major road because she'd been spotted visiting a law office there, although she needn't have bothered because everything the fast-talking lawyer had said involved fees and no guarantees. If she started changing direction every time she saw somebody she'd rather not see, she might as well spend all her time in this living room with the curtains drawn. But later that night, while Sarab snored lightly and Kulwinda's eyes were wide open, she saw her mobile phone flashing. Unknown number. On the other side, a voice that she recognised all too well. "You were seen talking to the police today. Try it again, and you will be in a lot of trouble." Kulwinda tried to defend herself, but, as always, her caller hung up before she had a chance to speak. Chapter 4. "There are no good men left in London," Olive remarked. "None." She surveyed the crowd from her perch at the bar while Nicky wiped down the counter, cursing the noisy blokes who had spent the past hour singing off-key rounds of football songs and winking sloppily at her. "There are plenty," Nicky assured her. "Plenty of duds," Olive said, "unless you want me to date Steve with the racist grandfather." "I would rather see you single for the rest of your life," Nicky said. Steve with the racist grandfather was a regular at the pub, who prefaced his bigoted comments with, "As my grandfather would say." He considered this a foolproof way to absolve himself of being racist. "As my grandfather would say," he once told Nicky, "is your skin naturally that colour, or are you rusting?" "Of course I would never say that. But my grandfather used to call khaki pants pecky pants because he honestly thought the colour was named after their skin tone. He's terrible, my grandfather." "That guy's all right," Nicky said, nodding at a tall man joining a group at a corner table. He took a seat and clapped one of his mates on the shoulder. Olive craned her neck to look at him. "Not too bad," Olive said. "He looks a bit like Lars. Remember him?"
"You mean Lorsch?" "He only told us 100 times how to pronounce it correctly," Nicky said. He was a Swedish exchange student that Olive's family had hosted when they were in year 12.
"That was the year I spent more time claiming to study at your house than ever." It was the only way she could get her parents' permission to spend so many evenings at Olive's house.
"With my luck, that guy's already taken," Olive said.
"I'll go and do some investigative work," Nicky said. She made her rounds at the tables and floated towards him.
"Can I get you anything?" she asked.
"Sure." As he gave his order, she noticed the wedding ring shining on his finger. "Sorry," Nicky said when she returned to Olive. She poured her friend a drink on the house and joined Olive on the other side of the bar once her shift was over. Olive sighed.
"Maybe I should go for an arranged marriage. Oh, how was your sister's date the other night?"
"Disastrous," Nicky said. "The guy talked about himself the whole time and then made a fuss because they were served water without lemon slices. I think he was trying to prove to Mindy that he was accustomed to a certain type of service."
"Oh, that's a shame."
"Oh, it's a relief, actually. I was worried that she'd settle for the first eligible Punjabi bachelor who came along, but she told me she gave him a polite and firm no thank you at the end of the night."
"Maybe Mindy's more influenced by you than she realises," Olive said.
"Well, I thought so too, but Auntie Geeta, who suggested this fine young man, gave Mum the cold shoulder at the shops the other day. Mindy felt terrible and called her up to apologise. Auntie Geeta guilted her into signing up for Punjabi speed dating. It's really not Mindy's thing, but she's going along with it."
"Oh, you never know who Mindy might meet or where.
The odds are in her favour at speed dating. 15 men in one night.
Sign me up. It could be really fun. If nothing else, she comes out of it having put herself out there. That's more than I'm doing."
"It sounds like a nightmare to me. These are 15 Punjabi men looking for a wife. When Mindy registered, she had to tell the organisers her caste, dietary preferences and rate her religiousness on a scale of 1 to 10.
Olive laughed. "I'd be a -3 in any religion," she said.
"I'd be a terrible candidate."
"Me too," Nicky said. "Mindy's about a 6 or a 7, although I think she claimed to be more religious if it pleased the right man.
I worry that she's only doing this for people like Auntie Geeta."
"Well, she should be the least of your problems right now," Olive said. "You have to teach grannies the alphabet tomorrow."
Nicky groaned. "Where do I start?" I told you I have lots of books on literacy that you could borrow. For year seven students, these women are starting from scratch. You're telling me that they can't read road signs, they can't read the headlines scrolling by when the news is on. How have they managed living in England all this time? I suppose they were always able to get by with their husband's help. For anything else, they could just speak in Punjabi. But your mum was never so dependent on your dad. My parents met at university in Delhi, and mum has her own livelihood. These women grew up in villages. Most couldn't spell their own names in Punjabi, let alone English. I can't imagine living my whole life like that, Olive said, taking a swig of her pint. Do you remember those writing books we used to have when we were kids? How to do capital letters and cursive? Nicky asked. Oh, the ones where you practice writing in the lines, penmanship books. Yes, those would be useful. You can find them online, Olive said. The school textbook publishers have a good catalogue. I can look out for them for you. I need something for tomorrow's lesson, though. Try one of the charity shops on King Street. After locking up, Nicky stayed back for drinks, and then she and Olive stumbled out onto the glistening road, arms linked together like schoolgirls. Nicky took her phone from her pocket and typed a message to Mindy. Hey, sis, found the man of your dreams yet? Does he starch his own turban and comb his own moustache, or will that be one of your duties? She giggled and pressed send. Nicky woke in the afternoon, her head still spinning from the night before. She reached for her phone. There was a message from Mindy. Drinking on a weeknight, Nick. Obviously sending stupid messages at that hour. Nicky wiped the blur from her eyes and wrote Mindy a reply. You have such a huge stick up your bum. Mindy wrote back within seconds. And you just probably woke up. Talk about bums. Grow up, Nicky. Nicky tossed the phone into her bag. It took her twice as long as usual just to get out of bed because her head felt so heavy. She winced at the squeaky sound of the shower tap and the sting of the water on her skin. After getting dressed, she walked up the street to the Oxfam shop. The musty smell of ancient wool coats tickled her nose. Old school textbooks and worksheets sat on a bottom shelf. Under the rows of popular novels that Nicky often browsed and bought, here, Nicky finally woke up. The familiar comfort of books helped to dissolve her hangover. Searching the shop, Nicky found a Scrabble game as well. A few tiles were missing, but it would still be useful for teaching the alphabet. She went back to the shelf to see if there was anything there for her, and while browsing, a title caught her eye. Beatrix Potter, Letters. She had a copy of this book at home, but its accompanying book, The Journals and Sketches of Beatrix Potter, was hard to find. She'd seen it in a used bookshop in Delhi on her pre-exams trip with Dad and Mum, but her wanting it had sparked an argument. She distracted herself from the memory by turning her attention to the adjacent shelf. Another title leapt out at her. Red Velvet, Pleasurable Stories for Women. She picked up the book and flipped through the pages, and some of the phrases that jumped out at her were, he undressed her slowly with his eyes, and then deftly with his fingers. Delia was basking naked in the summer sun, in the privacy of her own garden, but somewhere, Hunter was watching. I didn't come here to see you, she said haughtily. She spun on her heels to leave the office, and she saw his manhood bulging through his trousers. He wanted to see her. Nicky grinned and took the book to the cashier. Leaving the shop, she thought of the inscription she would pen in the red velvet book. Dear Mindy, I might not be as grown up as you, but I do know a bit more about certain adult rituals. Here's a guide for you and your dream husband. Nicky hauled the bag of books to the classroom and heaved them onto the desk. A sheet of paper had been taped onto it. Nicky, do not move desks and chairs in this room, Kulwinder. The desks had all been rearranged into their original neat rows. A low growl in Nicky's stomach reminded her that she hadn't yet eaten, but before she left for the Langad Hall, she shifted the desks into a circle again. The smell of dal and sweet jalebis mixed in the air with the clatter of utensils and voices. She took her tray through the line and was served roti, rice, dal and yoghurt. Finding an open space on the floor near a row of older women, Nikki recalled being about 13 and attending prayers with her parents at the smaller Enfield Gurdwara. She'd needed something from the car and approached Dad, who was sitting with some men, to ask for the keys. People had turned and stared as she crossed the invisible divide that segregated the sexes, even though there were no such rules in the Langar Hall. What did Mindy see in this world that she didn't? All of the women seemed to end up the same way, weary and shuffling their feet. Nikki watched as they trailed into the hall, adjusting their scarves, pausing every few moments to give an obligatory greeting to another community member. The group of ladies sitting next to her chattered away about each woman who walked in. They knew entire histories. Jaku's wife, oh, she's just had an operation. Poor thing. She won't be walking for a while. Her eldest son is taking care of her. You know the one I mean? She has two sons. This is the one who bought the electronic shop from his uncle. Doing very well. I saw him pushing her around the park in a wheelchair the other day. That woman over there is Nishu's younger sister, isn't it? Oh, they all have that same high forehead. I heard they had a terrible case of flooding in their house last year. They had to re-carpet the place and throw out a lot of furniture. Such a waste. They'd bought a new lounge set only 6 weeks before. Is that Dalvinder? I thought she was in Bristol, visiting her cousin. Nikki's eyes followed each woman as the commentary ran. She could barely keep up with this rapid stream of information and details. Then a woman that she recognized strode into the hall. Gulwinder. She noticed her drawing of breath from the little group next to her, and their voices lowered to a hush. Look at that one, marching in here like she's a big boss. She's been so stuck up lately, said a middle-aged woman, whose stiff green dupatta was pulled so low that it nearly concealed her face. Lately, she's always been Miss High and Mighty. I don't know what gives her the right to be like that now. It didn't surprise Nikki that they didn't like Gulwinder. She listened closely. Oh, don't, a wrinkly older woman said. She pushed her wire-rimmed frames further up the bridge of her nose. She's had a rough time, huh? We should be sympathetic. I tried that approach, but she didn't want my sympathy. She was downright rude to me, said Green Dupatta. Bappi Kaur went through the same problems, but at least she still acknowledges us when we say we're sorry for your loss. Gulwinder's different. I saw her walking around the neighbourhood the other day. I waved at her, and she just looked in the other direction and kept walking. How am I supposed to be kind to somebody like that? Bappi Kaur's problems were similar, not the same, the woman with the glasses said. Her daughter ran away with that boy from Trinidad. She's still living. Gulwinder's girl is dead. Nikki looked up in surprise. The women noticed her abrupt movement, but they kept talking. Death is death, someone else agreed. It is far worse. Nonsense, Green Dupatta scoffed. Death is better than life if a girl doesn't have her honour. Sometimes the younger generation needs this reminder. Somehow Nikki felt that these words were directed at her. She looked up at the woman who said it and met an even challenging gaze. The other women murmured their acknowledgement. Nikki found her food harder to swallow. She took a gulp of water and kept her head down. The woman with the wire-rimmed glasses made eye contact with Nikki.
Hi, they're not all terrible. There are plenty of respectable girls in Sartol. It depends on how they're raised, doesn't it? She said.
She gave Nikki an almost imperceptible nod.
This generation is selfish. If Maya had just considered what she was doing to her family, none of this would have happened, Green Dupatta continued. And don't forget about the damage she did to Dharampal's property as well. She could have destroyed the whole place.
The other women looked uncomfortable now. Like Nikki, they lowered their heads and focused on their dinners. In the sudden silence, Nikki could hear her own heart beating faster. Dharampal. Nikki wondered if they were referring to the same Dharampal from her writing classes. Nikki silently urged Green Dupatta to say more, but without an attentive audience, she grew quiet as well.
Entering the community centre building afterwards, Nikki was lost in thought. The woman in the Langer Hall had appeared so certain when she spoke of death and honour. Nikki couldn't imagine any offspring of Kulwinder's getting caught up in some act of dangerous resistance, as the women had implied. Then again, Kulwinder was so unyielding that perhaps her daughter had rebelled. Laughter rang down the corridor, breaking her thoughts. Strange, she thought. There were no other classes on at the same time. As she made her way to the room, the noise became louder, and she could hear a voice clearly speaking.
He puts his hand on her thigh as she's driving the car, and as she's driving, he moves his hand closer between her legs. She can't concentrate on driving, so she tells him, "Let me just get to a small side street," he tells her.
"Why do we have to wait?"
Nikki froze outside the door. It was Sheena's voice. Another woman called out,
"Gee, why is he so impatient? Can't keep it in his pants until they get to a side street? She should punish him by driving him around the car park until his little balloon deflates."
Another wave of laughter. Nikki threw open the door. Sheena was sitting on the front desk with the book open in her hands, and all the women were crowded around her. When they saw Nikki, they scurried back to their seats. The colour drained from Sheena's face.
"So sorry," she said to Nikki. "We saw that you had brought us books. I was just translating a story."
She slid off the desk and went to join the ladies at their seats. "That book is mine. It's private. It's obviously not for any of you," Nikki said when she felt that she could speak. She reached into the bag and pulled out the workbooks. "These are for you." She tossed them onto the desk and put her head in her hands. The women were silent.
"Why were you all here so early?"
"You said 7 o'clock,
said Ervinder.
"I said 7:30, since that was the time you all preferred," Nikki said.
The women turned to look accusingly at Manjeet.
"I remember her saying 7 o'clock last week," Manjeet insisted. "I remember it."
"Turn up your hearing aid next time," Ervinder said.
"I don't need to,"
Manjeet said. She tucked her scarf behind her ear to reveal the hearing aid to the class.
"This has never had a battery in it."
"Why would you wear a hearing aid if you didn't need one?" Nikki asked. Manjeet dropped her head in embarrassment.
"Completes the whole widow look," Sheena explained.
"Oh," Nikki said. She waited for a further explanation from Manjeet, but she simply nodded and stared at her hands. Preetham raised her hand.
"Excuse me, Nikki, can we change the start time back to 7 p.m?
Nikki sighed. "Oh, I thought 7:30 worked better with your bus schedule."
"It does, but if we finish earlier, it means we can get home at a decent hour."
30 minutes doesn't make that much difference, does it?" Sheena asked.
"It does for Anya and Kapil," Preetham said. "And what about Rajiv and Priyani?"
Nikki guessed that these were her grandchildren, but then the other women let out a collective groan.
"Ugh, those bloody idiots. One day they're in love, the next day she's confiding to the servants that she wants to marry somebody else," Sheena said. "Don't change the time, Nikki. Priyam's just wasting her time following a television series."
"I am not," Preetham said.
"Then you're wasting electricity," Arvinda chided. "Do you know how much our bill was last month?"
Preetham shrugged.
"Of course you don't," Arvinda muttered. "You waste everything because you've always had everything."
"Do you two share a home?" Nikki asked. She noticed a resemblance. Both women were light-skinned, with the same thin lips and striking greyish brown eyes. "Sisters?"
"Mother and daughter," Arvinda said, pointing to herself and then Preetham. 17 years apart, but thank you for thinking that I'm that young."
"Or that Preetham's that old,"
Sheena teased.
"Have you always lived together?"
Nikki asked. She couldn't imagine a world where she would live with Mum into her senior citizen years and retain her sanity.
"Only since my husband died," Preetham said. "How long has it been? Hi!"
She suddenly cried out.
3 months!
She took the edge of her dupatta and dabbed at the corners of her eyes.
"Oh, enough with the theatrics," Arvinda said. "It's been 3 years."
But it's still so fresh, Preetam moaned. Has it really been that long?
You know very well it has been, Arvinda said sternly. I don't know where you got this idea that widows have to cry and beat their chests every time their husbands are mentioned, but it is unnecessary.
She got it from the evening dramas, Sheena said.
There, another reason to cut back on the television, Arvinda said.
I think it's very sweet, Manjeet said. I want to be sad like that too. Did you faint at his funeral?
Twice, Preetam said proudly,
and I begged them not to cremate him. I remember that, Sheena said. You made a huge fuss before passing out, and then you woke up and started all over again.
She rolled her eyes at Nikki.
You have to do these things, see, otherwise people accuse you of being unfeeling.
I know, Nikki said. After Dad died, Auntie Geeta had come over to visit, black rivulets of mascara running down her cheeks. She wanted to mourn with Mum and was surprised that Mum remained dry-eyed, having done her crying in private. When she noticed a bubbling pot of curry on the stove, she became indignant.
You're eating? I had nothing after my husband died. My sons had to force it into my mouth.
Feeling pressured, Mum refrained from eating the curry and then wolfed it down after Auntie Geeta left.
Oh, you're all so lucky to be able to grieve like that, Manjeet said. Women like me don't get a funeral or any sort of ceremony.
Now, Manjeet, don't go putting it on yourself. There are no women like you, eh? Just men like him, Arvinda said.
I don't understand, Nikki said.
Are we going to do any work, or is this another class of introductions?
Dharampal interrupted. She shot Nikki a disapproving look.
Well, we have less than an hour now, Nikki said.
She handed the books out to the women.
There are some alphabet exercises in here.
She gave Sheena a letter-writing worksheet she had printed off the internet. The remainder of the lesson passed slowly and silently, with the women scrunching up their faces in concentration. Some looked tired after a few tries and put their pencils down. Nikki wanted to find out more about the widows, but Tarampal's presence kept her nervously on task. As soon as the clock struck 8:30, she told them they were dismissed, and they filed out quietly, putting their books back on the desk. Sheena ducked past her and said nothing, clutching her letter in her hand. The next lesson was on Thursday. All the women were promptly seated when Nikki arrived with an alphabet chart that she'd found in another charity shop. A is for apple, she said. They repeated apple after her. B is for boy. C is for cat. By the time they got to M, the chorus had faded. Nikki sighed and put down the chart.
Oh, I can't teach you to write in any other way, she said. We have to go through the basics.
My grandchildren use these books and charts, sniffed Preetam. It's insulting.
Well, I don't know what else to do, Nikki said.
You're the teacher. Don't you know how to teach writing to adults?
Well, I thought we'd be writing stories, not this, Nikki said. She picked up the chart and went back to the letters, and by the time they got to Z for zebra, the chorus was loud. There was a glimmer of hope. They were trying, at least.
Right, now there are a few writing exercises so we can learn about how to form words, Nikki said.
She flipped through the workbook and copied a few words onto the board. As she turned, she heard urgent whispers, but the women stopped talking when she was facing them again.
The best way to learn to spell words is to sound them out first. We'll start with the word cat. Who wants to repeat after me? Cat.
Preetam's hand shot up.
Yes, go ahead, Bibi Preetam. What sort of stories would you have us writing?
Nikki sighed.
It's going to be a long time before we can start writing stories, ladies. It's really difficult unless you have a sense of how the words are spelled and how the grammar works.
But Sheena can read and write in English.
And I'm sure it took her a lot of practice, right, Sheena? When did you learn?
I learned in school, Sheena said. My family came to Britain when I was 14 years old. That's not what I mean, Preetam said. I'm saying that if we tell Sheena our stories, she can put them in writing.
Sheena looked pleased.
I could do that, she said to Nikki. And then we could give each other advice on how to improve the stories.
But how will you ever learn to write? Nikki asked. Isn't that why you signed up for these classes?
The women shared a look.
We signed up for these classes because we wanted to fill our time, Manjeet said. Whether it's learning to write or telling stories, it doesn't matter. What matters is that we're keeping busy.
Nikki noticed she looked particularly sad when she said this. When she caught Nikki looking at her, she quickly smiled and dropped her gaze.
I'd rather be telling stories, said Arvinder. I've survived all this time without reading and writing. What do I need it for now?
There was a resounding agreement. Nikki was torn. If the tedium of learning to write was discouraging these women, she should motivate them to keep going. But storytelling was so much more fun.
In the back, Dharampal called out, I don't like this idea. I'm here to learn to write.
She crossed her arms over her chest.
You do your ABC colouring books then, Arvinda muttered.
Only Nikki heard her.
Here's what we can do, Nikki said. We'll do a bit of writing and reading practice for every lesson, and then if you want to do some storytelling sessions, Sheena and I can transcribe your stories and we can share them with the class. One new story each lesson.
Can we start today?
Preetham asked.
Nikki looked at the clock. We'll go through vowels first and then, yes, we can do some stories.
Some women already knew A, E, I, O, U, but others like Dharampal struggled with them. Everybody grumbled at her for holding back the rest of the class when Nikki quizzed them.
The A and the E are pronounced the same,
Dharampal kept insisting. Nikki instructed Sheena to start transcribing in the back of the classroom while she worked with Dharampal.
English is such a stupid language, Dharampal said. Nothing makes sense.
You're getting frustrated because it's new.
It'll get easier,
Nikki assured.
New? I've been in London for over 20 years.
It still came as a mild shock to Nikki that these women knew so little after living here for longer than she'd been alive.
Dharampal caught her expression and nodded.
Tell me, why haven't I picked up English?
Because of the English,
she said this triumphantly.
They haven't made their country or their customs friendly to me. Now their language is just as unfriendly with these au-au sounds.
In the back of the room, there was a rise of giggles and a squeal. Sheena was hunched over her paper, scribbling quickly, while Arvinda whispered in her ear. Nikki turned her attention back to Dharampal and carefully said different words with vowels until Dharampal admitted to hearing the slightest difference between them. By the time they were finished, so was the lesson. But the women in the back of the room were still crowded around the desk and whispering urgently. Sheena continued writing, pausing every now and then to think of a correct word or to rest her wrists. It was 9 o'clock.
Class is dismissed,
Nikki called out to the back. The women didn't appear to have heard her. They continued chatting, and Sheena dutifully transcribed. Dharampal crossed the room to pack up her bag. She tossed the women a look of contempt and muttered, bye, to Nikki. Nikki felt her spirits lifted by the women and their renewed sense of focus. They wouldn't learn to write this way, but they were obviously so much keener on telling stories. As she made her way towards them, the women fell silent. Their faces were flushed. Some were hiding smiles. Sheena turned round.
It's a surprise, Nikki, she said. You can't see. We're not done yet anyway.
It's time to lock up, Nikki said. You'll miss your bus.
Reluctantly, the women rose from their seats and picked up their bags. They left the room in a buzz of whispers. In the empty classroom, Nikki put the tables back in their usual place, just as she'd been told to do by Kulwinder. The light in the classroom in the community centre was still on. Kulwinder could see the window glowing as she walked out of the temple. She slowed down and considered what to do. Nikki had probably left the light on, and if Kulwinder didn't go up there to turn it off, Gurdaj Singh might decide that electricity was being wasted on classes for women. But she would not be safe entering that empty building. The phone call from the other night invaded her mind whenever she found herself alone. Before that, there had been two